Welcome back to a special edition of Racing Pulse on the Road, live here from Caulfield. The last of the trials has just finished and everyone's scattered. We're now just here with Mick Price and myself. Mick, great for you to hang around and have a bit of a chat to us this morning. It's been fascinating to come out here and try and give the listeners an insight into the hive of activity that occurs out here, especially on a Tuesday when it's a busy morning, but every single morning out here at Trackwork. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Good.
What's a normal morning for you? What time do you get up and get out here?
I like to be in the tower at 5 o'clock, so I have a stroll through the barn out here at 5, work last horse, 8:30, go through 3 barns, chat to 3 foremans, 1 vet, 1 farrier, staff get a chance to, you know, say whatever they want, and you sort of keep your connection there, and then into the office about 9:30 and do another 6 or 7 hours there, and then you head like mashed potato about 3 o'clock.
With the office work, you know, keeping across nominations, race patterns, race plans for all of the horses, how big a task is that?
It's a task where you've got to do it daily, put it that way. In this day of communication to owners, you know, if your horse races yesterday, it's trotted up by the vet in the morning. We get a bit of a soundness feel, how it looks, what the runner's taken out of it, do a post-race. Sometimes we have a follow-up race in that bit of information. Sometimes we don't. But, and plus, you know, like night racing, Sunday racing. And if you have a few runners, which we have a few runners, so we've got to be in touch with Warrnambool 4 or 5 times a day and get that information out. You know, that the information part of training horses is at a high level, I think, if you're an owner. Try and make mine not too long-winded, short, sharp. Voice email goes to, you know, the group of owners. So with all the technology, it allows you to train 100 horses, which we train, 25 down the beach, 75 here. But, you know, it works pretty smooth. I'd love to have an hour for my own self, you know, in the afternoon to sort of get on a pushy or go to the gym or swim or something. But, geez, we're busy at the moment.
I was going to say, how important is that for your mental welfare as well?
You know, when Michael first came here, I said, listen, we won't be working. I don't want you working 7 days a week, morning and afternoon, and being, you know, just that little bit flat about it. I think, you know, you need to have a little bit of creativity as a horse trainer. You need to visualise things and see your horses and picture things. And I think the worst part about, you know, if you're trying to do something is if you have fatigue. So make sure I sleep well, eat well, stay healthy, bright enough to train a big team of horses.
You've been through a few transitions. I think you were there when Epsom shut down, and you're now here when Caulfield's winding down as well.
Yeah, put the Moz on 2 tracks. Where am I going now, Cranbourne?
What's that process like, though, especially when you've got a big team?
You know what, it's no big deal. It'll be what you make it. I wouldn't have left here, you know. It's a fantastic training centre here. It's been the making of me. I think the training tracks and, you know, the main thing here is we've had a very good connection, we have had, with the admin on the track. And the trainers. I think a lot of admin and committees see trainers as whingers, but you know what? We just want the good facilities for our owners. So I think if there was a better culture from, you know, those on committee and the trainers, at the end of the day, it's all about the owners. We should all be on the same side of the fence. So, you know, when we're whinging, we want better facilities for our horses. We want sounder horses. We want to be able to gallop them. We want to be able to go to the races, fit, present a better product, and we need help all the time. I reckon Neil Bainbridge is, you know, like very proud of whatever's going on at Cranbourne. He's so proud of his track out there, and I get a great feel from him. He wants a training centre of absolute excellence. You know, there's 100 metres crossways of grass tracks. So here, I don't know what we'd have, but on most tracks, but no track would have that much grass available, you know, the uphill grass. So I'm really looking forward to going there. But look, Jason Kerr has been fantastic here. Like, we have trainers meetings here. He's rational. He's you know, able to put up with the trainer, constant whinge all the time, and he helps. So, I mean, this club, you know, say what you want, but, you know, it was only a few months ago that they spent another $250 on a poly track because the poly track was substandard. You know, and if we get an injury, it's not just the trainers get an injury, it's the owner's investment that gets the injury, which is what these race clubs don't quite get. You know, there's I know we're getting kicked out of here, but I get the impression that if you're a race club committee, there's no votes in training horses at your track. You know what I mean? Because all it is a spend with not much revenue coming back off it. But I just think they need to grasp the whole thing about, you know, the absolute fundamental of the game is the owner. I know there's the punter too, but I just think if you get that, you'll get a better result.
And I mean, the perpetual story about Sandown as well. Do you like keeping Sandown? Do you think it's inevitable that Sandown will have to go and the funding gets used here at Caulfield or in other areas of the industry? Do we need three metropolitan racetracks? What's your thoughts?
Sandown's a beautiful facility. Tim Bailey lets us go there and gallop, and it's an absolutely superb track to gallop on and race on. You know, since they redid it however many moons ago and did a lakeside and a hillside, it's a beautiful track. Aren't we about racing? You want to make money, go operate a hedge fund. You know, I understand that these clubs need to make money and put it back into racing. That's fine. But it's a race course and we're in racing. You know, you want to do something else and make money, go and do something else. But I wouldn't, you know, say if you're a committee member here that you need to beat your chest and have a look at the bottom line and say how much money we made. You need to improve Sandown, not get rid of it.
Oh, a lot of trainers probably concur with that. What about moving to where you're going down to Cranbourne? Is it logistically a difficult move? Do you do it slowly or do you do it all in one hit?
No, don't do it in one hit. That's a good question. And I reckon towards the end of July, those stables of mine will be finished. So it'll be a transition where there'll be some staff are over there, some staff are over here, and build Cranbourne's 68 boxes, 12 yards, 80 all up, and empty Caulfield. So it'll be a transition. It might take a few weeks, maybe a couple of weeks. And besides, there's two of us. So Junior, part of the bonus of having him is he knows every blade of grass at Cranbourne.
Yep.
So I'm guessing, and he lives there in his little mansion. So he'll be over there doing the heavy lifting. I'll just come in when it's all set.
I'll talk to you about your horses in a moment. But before that, I've had a bit of a focus today and I'm going to have a chat to Dwayne Dunn tomorrow, which is going to be fascinating because he's been going through a bit of a tough time as well. And I spoke to Michael Walker, who you're very close to, and I know you went and visited him yesterday. Speaking to your apprentices here this week with the National Jockeys Trust meeting on Saturday, it brings forefront of mind looking after the jockeys and the risks that they put themselves on the line every single day. Have a listen to a snippet of what Michael had to say yesterday in hospital.
You look at that fall, Michael. I was going to fall nice on my feet and then the horse's back leg come through and kicked me in the calf. So when it kicked me in the calf, obviously everything inside my calf, that area has exploded. Well, there's nowhere for it to go. So my legs just try to pop like a balloon. And it was getting tighter and tighter and tighter and more swollen. So once this happened at 9 p.m. at night with the race, I never got operated or they didn't work out till 4:30 a.m. Friday morning what it was. So I was in pain that whole time. Every single thing they could give me wouldn't work. I just was in pain. I couldn't take it. I was telling them to chop my leg off. I was that much pain. So they obviously worked out what was compartment syndrome, which they did two cuts either side of my calf to release it. And it's still all open now. There's two, like, probably 8 or 9 centimetre cuts. You can see it. I'm looking at it now. I've got a brace on, but there's two tubes coming out that's sucking out all the blood and all the fluid and everything. So I'm looking at that right now. They had a second operation yesterday, which was to try and close it up. But they couldn't because it was too swollen. So I'm going for a third operation tomorrow. And if they can close it up, they will, or else I have to have a 2 days' time, fourth operation to have a skin graft to close it up.
It was harrowing just listening to it. And that's just talking about the compartment syndrome he's got. That's not even dealing with the fracture of the tibia and then the ACL knee reconstruction he's going to need to have. How was he when you saw him last night?
He was fine. He was very bright. Had his girl there with him. And, oh, look, you know, that interview, he's probably on a bit of medication, to be fair, and tired and all that sort of stuff. But he was bright as. He's a tough bugger. He'll come back. He's 37. I don't think, I didn't see the x-rays of the break, but I don't think it was horribly severe. Obviously, he's got ligament damage there too. Might take a fair while, but he'll come back.
He's a tough bugger, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He is. And look, he loves being a jockey, and he, you know, he's a sort of physical sort of bloke. He's got a good attitude to it, and he'll come back no problem at all.
Over the years, you've dealt with a lot of star jockeys. Who do you think's the best?
Oh, look, my go-to man has always been D. Oliver. I've always, you know, when I was at Freedy's, he was a kid at Freedy's, we sort of, you know, I was there when he was there. I watched him, and I'd have to have a circle around Damien, you know. Although, I would say Craig Newitt would have ridden the most Group 1 winners for me. He's probably got on the right horses, you know, Lake and Rupee, Pompey Ruler, yep. Heart of Dreams, you know, right place, right time. And I'd have to say he might be in contention for Ayrton the way things are unfolding. But anyway, a bit of water to go under the bridge there. But yeah, look, I have absolute respect for all the jockeys and what they have to go through. The one thing I would say is I reckon they need to give each other more room in races. You know, these Melbourne races are so muddly. They dig up. Next minute, someone in front wants to be a genius and get these mid-race sectionals too slow. There's horses whipping around the outside. They're on heels. So, see, the part of... his horse probably weakening in front of Michael the other night, but I just reckon they ride boot to boot too tight. You know, I don't get it. There's nothing more sacred than your health. And... I don't know, I watch these races and I just think in Melbourne in particular, there should be better run races with better tempo, more room. I mean, I know they're paranoid about criticism for being three deep and that, but I just reckon they ride against each other too much.
You've been in the worst position possible. If we go back years and years ago with Gavin Lisk, and there was, I think that was a day after Adrian Ledger as well, and I can't even imagine what it'd be like when your apprentice is in a situation like that. But I think at the time you even said maybe we're riding too tight back then, so nothing really has changed.
Yeah, that was a bit different. He was a kid who got on heels, and I think it's a little common mistake kids make. And, you know, I had a couple of these kids trial here, and the one thing I do say to them is do not get on heels. You know, give yourself a length, you know. You need to anticipate. As soon as you're on heels and you're down, it's horrible. You know, the potential for catastrophic injury for people, you know, and horses, obviously. But, yeah, I just, you know, drive you mad, these Melbourne races. I just think they should be run at better tempo and jockeys should give each other more room rather than boot to boot. You know, it's just no margin for error.
You mentioned Ayrton. Are you as excited as Junior, Michael Kent Junior, every time he talks about
never.
Him? Gee, he looks good.
I'm never as excited as him. But he runs even time doing a phone call.
Is he up in Brisbane yet?
He leaves tonight. He'll land at Eagle Farm at 4 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Yep.
So I think it's 11 o'clock fly door to door. Yeah, 4 or 5 hours.
And if he does get into the Stradbroke 49.5, I know Ben Thompson's put his hand up, and you mentioned Froggy Newitt. Froggy can easily get down to 49.5 with some.
Yeah. There's a bit of water to go under the bridge. Get to the Fred Best, and we'll fine tune it from there. But you know, there's a few that are sort of we can't have, but yeah, look, we'll be fine-tuning it. There's probably half a dozen names there, you know, roughly.
Yeah, you've had a lot of good horses. When was the last time you had one who was so unexposed that you were so excited about?
Look, I'm not trying to hype the horse. I'm just, you know, people ask where you're going with him, and I say, well, this is where I think we're going, and it'll be, you know, be a big job. If he's right, he'll run in the Stradbroke. If he's not right, he doesn't have to run there, you know. But I think it's a good idea to take that young type of big Kiwi gelding to Brisbane. And Fred Best will look good for him. That'll be Jay Carr. And then after that, we'll just make a decision. But he can have a spell up there, do a bit of racing up there, and come back a beautiful four-year-old. I actually think a good distance will be a mile to 2,000 metres with him. I know Junior's talking about the
Golden Eagle
for the money. But I suppose, you know, we'll have a chat about it. You'd love to win a Cox Plate, wouldn't you? Yeah.
We'd love to see him in a Cox Plate.
Yeah, of course. Anyway, that's all to be discussed.
All right. Profiteer, how's he going?
He's good. He's done, had 3 weeks spell, 3 weeks trot and canter work with Blair Richardson, the equestrian. He's having another 3 weeks out. He'll come down here, have about a 10, 12-week prep. I'm thinking he's going to run first up in Amoya, and he'll come back a beautiful three-year-old.
Who else are you really excited about in the stable?
Oh, look, I suppose they're the two main ones, I guess. Odium's Group 1 winner. She's up there for the Dane Ripper. She's done a bit of barrier work. She'll be right. She should train on to be a lovely four-year-old mile mare. She's got plenty of races to win. She's a lovely big sound written tycoon filly. There's three of them. I've got some nice young horses. I've got a Tarzino here called Mangani, who apparently was Tarzan's gorilla. And, I reckon he's on the up and up. I might run him at Flemington on Saturday, but he sort of fits a little bit of the Tarzino profile. One run, spell, and then possibly run in the Guineas and Derby, a three-year-old, you know.
That's exciting. And now, the jump-outs today, did you have the ex-Kiwi horse in the jump-outs here this morning that has performed well?
I'm Thunderstruck. He was good. Zara rode him. He's got a little habit there of rolling in under pressure, but he was good. So he's still a little bit tubby. But, his first win was very impressive. And second win in Group 2, I didn't think I saw the best of him. He's probably trained off. But we'll get a very, very good prep out of him. And certainly he's a horse to follow, especially with someone like Zara on him.
Mick, good to catch up. I know you've got a lot of book work to do. I'll let you get over to the office. Anything we should be backing other than anything on Saturday? You've got spring break in tomorrow.
River Twain's been unlucky. Redwood Shadow with Flemington will be good. So it needs a wet track. But I would say have something on Mangani just in case he runs up to what I think of him. River Twain's due. A couple there.
Beautiful. Mick, good to see you, mate.
Good on you, Michael.
Michael.